Committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And it's 2019.
Hooray!
We did it.
We didn't do anything about, we didn't say what our last episode was last year. We were very quiet, just sort of.
Yeah, we were a little quiet this holiday. It's been a crazy holiday season, I think, for both of us. And obviously, I don't know, I kind of wanted to avoid a little bit of the year-end kind of boilerplate stuff because everybody does it, and you know, there's a lot smarter critics and thinkers than us telling you what to watch, but we will do a little bit of 2018 stuff in a little bit. We're gonna be also looking forward to talking a little bit about our film
resolutions
what we want to do in 2019 as film goers and film thinkers, all that kind of stuff. But first, we got to give you a preview of something that's coming up in the next couple of weeks here. If you are a Chicago film fan, then you know about the Midwest Independent Film Festival, and you definitely know about the executive director of that film festival. It's Amy Guth, back again here on NoCo Cinema. Amy,
hello.
Thanks so much for coming back.
Always a joy to be here with you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Amy.
We're so lucky that you are willing to give us your time.
Amy the Truth Guth.
That's
Amy is back.
I always say that when people go, is it Guth? And I go, it's Guth. It rhymes with truth.
Yeah.
They're like, ooh, that's good. And then they usually will go, oh, it also rhymes with tooth. That's funny. No, just stop there. It was cool and sexy until you went there. Yeah.
And then
you made it about dental.
That's when you block them on Twitter.
Pretty much.
Just block them off. So the Midwest Independent Film Festival, you were here not that long ago, talking about the Best of the Midwest Awards, like
the nomination party.
Yeah. Showing off to everybody what was getting nominated for the Best of the Midwest Awards Gala, which is coming up on Thursday, January 17th. It's going to be from 7 to 11 over at the Promontory Chicago. Address for that is 5311 South Lake Park Avenue West. And
I love the Promontory. I'm so excited that it's there. I'm driving everyone crazy on social media because it's a beautiful venue. I mean, I've been there several times on my own, so I was so excited that they were willing to partner with us. And their upstairs music venue is so beautiful. Little known fact about the Promontory, though. They have like weekend brunch, like lots of people, but they also have Friday daytime brunch.
Daytime brunch.
So for those of us who maybe don't work normal hours, you
can
roll in there on a Friday afternoon and get a very delicious brunch. There's a DJ happening. You have your little mimosa. It's a really good time, and it's a beautiful space. Upstairs is the music venue, and it's very beautiful, and there's a bar up there, and it's cool, and we're taking it over on the 17th. I'm so excited for this. So we did the Best of the Midwest Awards a little bit differently this year. In years past, it's all happened one night. We split it up because I really wanted to celebrate every piece of that individually. So as you said, Tom, we had the nomination party back in December. We had that on December 4th. And we made a cool video to play announcing the nominees live in the theater. So people were excited. We had the people you don't normally hear from at the film festival. You know, a lot of times at an awards ceremony, you have, you know, a documentary maker is going to present the award for the best documentary film. So I said, for this nomination party, let's hear from volunteers.
Yes.
So we had like the people who are taking your tickets and people who are showing you to your seat and like all the people that are doing all this stuff. And a couple of sponsors even. Like I said, get your phone, make a video and announce the nominees and then be sworn to secrecy. And people got so creative with it. It was really fun. I have some outtakes of my own on Instagram because there was a light in my apartment that was flickering and it was ridiculous. And I had to keep redoing it, and I was getting frustrated. But the founder, Mike Quilford, he co-founded the festival, and he's the board president. He did one like with his gear because he's a cinematographer. You know, we had like all these people doing them. One of the sponsors, Colette Gabriel from Keslo Camera, she passed her phone around at a party and had all these women that work in really badass roles in the Chicago film community each say a different name. And so, like, all these heavy hitters were in her video, and at the end they were like, congratulations, Deborah. It was so fun, and it was just, I loved the energy that that brought. And then everybody's in the theater going, like, did I win? Did I, you know, am I nominated? Am I nominated? And then people would, you know, applaud as it went. So it was really fun. So we've got winners now. It's so exciting.
Ooh. It's just been boiled down now. The real shows is yet to begin.
It's been boiled down, and then we opened online voting. I actually, while that video was, while the video played, and then I screened the 5 nominated short films, while they were screening, I went upstairs, I whipped open my laptop, got on the Wi-Fi at the Landmark, turned the voting live so people could, I mean, I had, like, told them that, like, if you have a SurveyMonkey app, you can vote right now.
Just, yeah, the minute this showcase is done, you can go vote.
That's right. And people did. So people started voting. We had a ton of people voting. And it was interesting because I could see, you know, filmmakers do a big push on social media, and I could see that reflected in the vote. So it was really cool to see people hustling and talking about why people should vote for them. And we had a lot of cool stuff. I mean, we added a documentary short category this year, so we have 11 categories. And it was very cool. And, like, the music video categories were all up there, and people were, I think that brought a lot of people to the voting that maybe were connected musically but not cinematically. Mm-hmm. So that was just very cool and super fun. And of course, the artists themselves who were in them, including Taylor Bennett, who's Chance the Rapper's little brother. Yes. Like, his video Rock and Roll is one of them. So it was really fun. So they were out kind of hustling for their, hey, this guy shot my video, it's great, go vote for them. So it was really fun. So it all happens the 17th, which is a Thursday. We're normally doing things on Tuesdays, but this is a Thursday. And it's going to be a lot more elevated from in past years. It's going to be real fancy.
Yeah, get dressed up. Get your best blazer on.
Yeah.
Throw on a nice
gown. Maybe a nice pair of slacks.
Yeah. I just want to wear something sparkly and fancy. That's my deal.
Well, okay. I mean, that's some of the fun of doing things like this, is that, like, yeah, it's a night where you can just celebrate. You know, if you're one of the artists nominated, you can celebrate yourself, celebrate your collaborators, your friends, other people in the scene.
Absolutely.
And this is something that Connor and I have talked about in the very recent past, about, like, how what award shows mean.
Right.
Because the Golden Globes will, when you guys are hearing this, it'll have been yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So we'll be watching the Golden Globes tomorrow. You know, this is tomorrow for us. Oscars are coming up. All these big award shows that people are watching. And sometimes the conversation centers around, like, why does this matter? Why are we watching people, like, compete? We see it as a competition to win an award, but I think award shows can really be an opportunity to highlight and bring things to the forefront, especially on a scale like the Midwest Independent Film Festival. Because I don't know, I guess I just wanted to ask, in your opinion, why is it important to have awards for these people?
Yeah, I think you're exactly on target there, and that is, the film festival is kind of an equalizer in a way, and it's a community organizing tool, really. And so you, if your film has a giant budget or if it has a small budget, I don't know that when I screen it. You know, when I'm watching it for the initial screening, I just know, like, is it a great film? Great. And then later I might find out, wow, this person made this for a song. You know, one of the films that's nominated for Best Feature is Two in the Bush, which we showed this fall. Mm-hmm. She made that on... and she's talked about that quite a bit. She made it on a shoestring budget and really scrapped along and, like, really pushed that film and made it happen. It's in Chicago. It's recognizably in Chicago with a Chicago cast and crew. You know, things like that, that, you know, it matters, because having laurels, having awards, things like that, like, it elevates your game and it validates what you're doing in a way. And some people are like, I just want to make films, I really don't care. And that's fine. That's valid too. Sure. Just make a film for the sake of making a film. Don't make a film because you want to win stuff. But it does help position you to get funding for your next one. And if you, you know, if you do a short film or a music video or something like that and you win a bunch of awards, it's much easier to go in and say, okay, I learned a lot, because you know you did. Mm-hmm. But it's much easier to go and say, okay, you know, I did this for this budget and now I know what I can do on that budget. So with, you know, 20,000 more, I could do so much more. Here's what I want for a feature. People, it legitimizes your work in a way and gives you kind of a step up on the ladder so that you can get more support and more resources for your next project.
Exactly. That business side of it, I think, is really important, because even though cinema is a you know, it is a very artistic medium. We, as appreciators and curators of cinema, really like to focus in on that aspect of it. But unfortunately, you know, both fortunately and unfortunately, it is also a business.
That's right.
It's art and commerce kind of meeting in a really interesting place. And as you said, if you have an award attached to something, if some, you know, who knows who could see it then, and you got, you know, plenty of people out there wanting to be producers. Yeah, I want to produce some films. I want to do some indie stuff. That can be your ticket to be like, well, it did win an award in the Midwest. Absolutely. So it must be worth watching.
And, you know, yeah. I can't tell you how many times people will tell me about a film and within the first two sentences say, oh, it's cleaning up. It's cleaning up awards. Oh, it's really doing
that's
well
like
at festivals.
A huge meaning. There's like a lot of push behind
absolutely
that.
And because what they're really saying is other people validate my opinion,
right
so yeah. If someone's recommending a film to you and it's got a bunch of laurels on it, you don't have to, you're not just listening to your one friend, you're listening to, well, someone who does my job at these 16 festivals also think it's pretty good. Maybe I will take
there's something to that.
Yeah,
I did like what you said earlier. I mean, obviously this is really important for just the individual artists in getting their exposure and everything, but it's also great as a community organizing tool.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to go out and you're going to be able to rub shoulders with these people that otherwise you would not have met. And I mean, there's no better reason to go out. I mean, what else are you doing on a Thursday, right?
Yeah.
You're partaking in the timeless tradition of Thirsty Thursday and blacking out before work on Friday? Or are you going to go out and like see some wonderful independent right. cinema and get to actually go out and like meet some people who can either elevate your craft or maybe could end up being a collaborator that you work with?
The collaboration piece is one of my favorites. And there's a blog post that I just wrote yesterday up on MidwestFilm.com. about a program that we're launching called the Pay It Forward Project. And that is essentially almost every time we do an event, whether it's the regular First Tuesday screening or mm-hmm. this for the BMAs, someone will make a comment to me like, ah, I wish I could go, but like, I got to buy groceries. I can't. And, you know, sometimes people tell me like really tough things. Like, honestly, I blew out my credit cards to get this film done and I'm in a world of hurt. I got to move home or what, you know, people like tell me some rough stuff, and some people have families to support, and there's a lot of stuff. It's not just like young people with that only need to care for themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, there's plenty of filmmakers that have spouses and families, and sometimes I really hear some rough stories, and I wish that I could just comp everybody, but the reality is like we're an arts nonprofit and we have to keep the lights on, literally and figuratively.
Right.
So I had this idea to come up with the Pay It Forward Project, and that is so starting right now at the BMAs and then all year and beyond, there will always be an option to sponsor a ticket for somebody. And it's all confidential. So it won't be like, hey, you know, Joe Smith is responsible for you being able to attend, because I don't want it to be awkward. I don't want anyone to feel beholden to someone else.
Yeah, it's not about that.
Yeah, it's not about that. And I don't want anyone to feel ashamed about saying like, man, I am so broke, it's not funny. Because we joke about starving artists, but sometimes like it's real. Sometimes people
absolutely.
Are like, honestly, I don't have health insurance because I maxed out my credit cards to make this film. I screwed up. I don't know what to do. I'm really dire. So I want to be able, I don't want anyone to not have access to the networking opportunities. And I don't think that's a frivolous thing. I don't think it is extra and fun and fancy necessarily to have access to networking things. I think it's really important.
It's the game. It's the business. This is how it works.
Absolutely. And if you went so far as to max your credit cards to get your film done, you better be out there hustling it. And if you can't afford admission to go sell your film, you got a problem. So this would help offset costs for people. So there's an option if you whether or not you can attend the BMA Awards Gala, there's an option to buy a Pay It Forward. And so you buy the price of a regular ticket, $60, and that will sponsor somebody. So it'll kind of sit in a fund so that as we hear from people that are like, honestly, I got to pay for my kids, you know,
right? Yeah,
I can't, my lights are going to get shut off. When we hear people in like dire situations like that, we can help them. And, you know, it's going to be, we'll learn as we go of how to do that. And, but it's a high priority to me to keep it confidential on both sides, so that if you want to go and say, I'm on a sponsored ticket tonight, that's your business, but I'm not going to out you.
No.
Because I don't want it to be about shame or you owe us. I want it to be like, I want you here. I want us all here in the room together having this conversation. I think there's value in your presence being in the room. So that's why I launched that. Because I really do think there's so much, that art sports organizations, especially with events attached to them, can do to get people involved and get people helping each other and collaborating. And that's my favorite thing at the end of a night when two people are talking that, oh man, I saw your film. Oh, I didn't realize that was you. That's cool. I'm so glad I finally met you. Yeah, you know, I loved how you did this. How did that go? Oh, well, this is who I talked to about it, and this is what I learned. Oh, that's interesting. That's what I'm trying to do. And suddenly you have this, hey, we should just work on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, suddenly you have
this thing. You get the next
stage. Yeah. Totally.
Well, it's wonderful that you're supporting people on both sides of the ballot box.
It's really great. And honestly, you know, as you mentioned, regular price tickets are on sale now for $60.
$75 at the door.
And, you know, if you're a great appreciator of film, and especially independent film, it really, I don't think it would hurt too much to try and, you know, rustle up a little bit something extra to make sure that maybe a filmmaker who is might be nominated, might be in this gala, you know, might be having a film shown, might be winning an award. You know, it really doesn't hurt too much to throw in a little bit of extra scratch and help someone get there.
I would say that situation has come up. Every nomination gets one comped ticket, because this is also a significant funding source for us, this party.
Absolutely.
One filmmaker said to me, thanks for the comp. Is there any way I can get another? I just cannot afford to bring my spouse. And, you know, and that broke my heart to be like, so
Let's do something for one another. Like, let's just do a little something for one another. And again, $60 is really not asking too much. And even that, if you're just going yourself, if you're just coming $60, you're getting a lot of stuff here. It's going to be a lot of fun.
There's going to be some drinking. There's going to be some food. We have DJ Cashera is going to be there, who is awesome.
Oh, my favorite.
So awesome. And that's going to be a really fun time. Then we have all these cool videos. They are a collaboration between P3 Media Works, which is a post and production house. Production and post house here in Chicago, and Potenza Productions, which is another production company here in Chicago. They are generously donating their time to make these really cool videos.
Lovely.
Just like when you know at the Oscars, it shows like the clips and the stills,
sure,
and all
that.
So we have these so everybody can kind of see. And in case you maybe saw every single film we show this year, you'll see those stills and be like, oh, that film, I remember that. Oh, yeah, that's right. See all those. And then, of course, we have the top secret winner videos.
Ooh,
hello.
Very exciting.
Big drum roll. Big drum roll for those.
It's going to be exciting. And then the awards are going to be sitting on my kitchen table, and I'm going to schlep them down. They're going to be sitting there.
Throw them in like a Yeti or something like that and keep them cool.
I'm going to have so much stuff to schlep the day of. but we have some cool partners. We have a pastry chef who's going to be there with some very fancy, wonderful treats. You can find out about her at Camellia Bakes, Camellia. And she's on social media and all that, and she's bringing her A game for lots of delicious, wonderful things. So we have treats, we have food, we have music, we have awards, we have all the things. And
I'm 100% excited. I'm 100% excited.
There's something for everybody here.
There really is. Even if you're looking to just dip your toes in and be like, you know what, I really want to get into this. I really want to get into a local film scene. You know, this is the number one way to do it, honestly. Outside, I mean, getting involved is the first step of all of this.
Really, I would say show up to one of our events, the regular events. The season is going to start February the 5th, which is so exciting. We're already in the 2019 season. Female Filmmakers Night is going to be in March.
Oh, yes.
I've put it in March to line up with International Women's Month. So we're going to start announcing those really soon.
Yeah. And even past, you know, just this gala event, something that I don't know if we've ever talked about is that through the Midwest Independent Film Festival, you can become a member.
Exactly what I was going to say. Yes. So you can come to one event for either 10 or 15 bucks, depending on where you want to see, mm-hmm. where you want to sit. If you like to sit up front close to the screen, 10. If you want to sit kind of in the back in one of the big comfy seats, that's 15. So I recommend that. But you can do that. Or if you become a member, there's a bunch of different ways to be a member. But if you become a member, then you have the seats all year. Like that part is comped. Your seats are free. I send you a comp code every single month, and you just pick where you want to sit. So you can be an individual member. You can be an individual premium member. That's the fancy seat. You can do a couples membership, which saves you some cash. Couples premium. I added two new ones. There's a student membership now for $35. So you get tickets all year. And we've defined student as an active student or within 5 years of graduation, mm-hmm. because I get it. I know how it goes.
Oh, it's totally.
You know, And so that student membership, that's going to be really helpful too, because I don't want people to feel like, oh, I'm just starting out, I can't go yet, I'm not established enough.
I mean, now that is the time that
you
want to go.
Yeah,
that's when you need to be there.
That's when you need to go and be making friends and talking to people. But then I've also added a lifetime membership. No one has taken me up on that.
I'm not kidding. I'm a little bit looking into it. I'm like, okay, so
maybe we could be the. You say there's no one that has the lifetime membership yet?
Nobody has the lifetime membership.
Tom?
Okay, do you got $900?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, it kind of pays for itself over the course of a lifetime.
Over the course of one lifetime?
Yeah.
Actually, it pays for itself really quickly. It pays for itself in, like, I think we decided, because you get the premium seats for that. Mm-hmm. So it would pay for itself in something like 7 years.
I could live another 7 years.
I could try, yeah. I was actually thinking about checking the watt. Yeah, I could do that.
I could do that. I could drum up $900. But either way, there's so many options to be a consistent part of this. And, you know, even if you can't, it's kind of like Bears season tickets. Even if pass
it
along.
Like season ticket holders. And so we did a thing for, I saw a lot of people on social media leading up to Christmas kind of like, oh my God, I need a last minute idea. What can I Amazon Prime? And I was like, So I got my Photoshop skills going, and I made this little gift certificate that looked like a film slate, right? Like a clapperboard.
Nice.
And I was like, hey, if you're stuck, buy a membership or buy a single set of tickets, and I'll send you like a custom welcome letter and a gift certificate. And
Amy
I got
Goose.
The nicest emails from people. They made me so happy. I was sitting there on like Christmas Eve sending relatives these PDFs going like, I'm so glad you're supporting the filmmaker and your family. Good for you. Oh my gosh, this is so great.
It is great.
Kind of personalize a letter and send it back to them. I mean, one of them was a guy who said, my dad is retired and now he's entering filmmaking and I want to support him. And
yes.
I was like, I love
yes.
that. So there were so many great stories. It was mostly like parents going, I really want to make sure my kid did not screw up by getting a film degree. So what can I do?
This is 100% the way to do it.
And there were some very romantic ones of like, hey, my husband loves to go to this. I don't. Can I just like buy him a membership? Will it be fine? There was plenty of those. It was fine.
Go on me. It's on me.
Yeah, just go. Just go. And then some couples were like, this is kind of going to be like date night.
Yeah, this is what we do together.
Because that way, you know, the first Tuesday of every month, you got a date night.
You got
night.
A date night.
Yeah. Done.
Just have your babysitter on call. You know,
just
have someone
go
set
ahead
make sure they're not a member first.
Yes.
And then
we don't offer babysitting. Although, gosh, that's a good idea. We could offer childcare. Whoa,
oh my
good
God.
Idea.
I know a few
Speaking
people.
Speaking of new things, there's one other new thing coming, and that is in February, we are, before each of our screenings, we always have we call it the producer panel, where we just kind of have something related to the topic of the film we're showing that night.
Mm-hmm.
And we have about a 45-minute conversation with Q&A. And people can, you know, have access to professionals that have already done the thing they're trying to do. I think they're great. They're really fun. We are expanding that. So we're going to have some standalone events that are educational events. The first one coming up is really going to be about kind of career trajectory of how to balance like making money off doing commercial work and still doing the creative stuff you want that might not be as financially lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have that in late February. So these are going to be quarterly for this year, these educational events. And, you're hearing it first. I saved this announcement just for you.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Finally. Amy, you're
too
good to us.
You got an exclusive.
You're too good to us here on NoCo Cinema. Again, this is the Best of the Midwest Awards Gala. It's on Thursday, January 17th, 2019, 7 to 11 p.m. You can get tickets right now for $60. And I have been told, you know, keep an eye out. Keep an eye out for some maybe promotions.
I mean, you might want to connect with us on social media because there might be some like 2-hour flash sales popping up.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Be on the lookout. Again, that's at the Promontory Chicago, 5311 South Lake Park Avenue West in beautiful Hyde Park. Amy Guth, Executive Director of the Midwest Independent Film Festival. Thank you so much for coming back.
Always a pleasure.
All right. We're going to be coming back in just a moment here talking about our 2019 film resolutions and a little bit about some films that Connor chose out of 2018 that he thinks that people might have overlooked a second, you know, maybe need a little bump up and be like,
just
hey, let's
way,
watch these.
Just a way to contribute to the end of year film conversation without making a top 10 list.
Absolutely. All that's coming up next here on NoCo Cinema WGM Plus. Back in just a bit. We'll be right back. everybody. You're back listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. Tomash.
Connor Cornelius.
Oh, man, it's been a really long time. I know. It's been a crazy holiday season. And 2018 was an interesting year.
That's a mild way to put it.
That's a mild way to put it. Both in general and in the world of film and in everyone's personal lives and everything. So we're going to try to get back strong for 2019.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking a little bit about our 2019 film resolutions in just a moment. But I wanted to bring up an excellent Facebook post.
Tom.
From the man himself, Connor Cornelius. He decided to not do so much a list of the best of 2018 or anything like that, but rather tell me a little bit about what you were trying to do here.
So, I mean, we talked about it a little earlier, but, you know, the end of the year is a time where I feel like a lot of people are expressing, they're like feeling reflective, they're trying to look back on the year. If you're a film critic or involved in cinema in any way, you do a top 10 list, you know? And so I saw so many of these coming out from so many different people who are all way more knowledgeable in the medium than I am. But I still, you know, I mean, we do this show every week and we want to contribute to the conversation in some way.
Sure.
So I thought that a way to do that was, instead of providing a top 10 list of movies that, you know, I've personally thought were the best of the year, I thought I would just like post five movies that I feel like people didn't really get a chance to see that maybe otherwise wouldn't really be in that conversation. Sure. And I certainly don't think that necessarily these five movies are the best of the year. I would say that one of them is certainly a couple of them were my favorites of the year, but I decided to just talk about movies that I feel like people didn't get a chance to see or were underseen in the grand scheme of things.
I gotta say, there's a paragraph here in this post that I think really sums it up really great. You say, speaking of characters, 2018 was a great year for them and for films in general. There were a whole lot of them that spoke truth to power, but there were some that did more. Films that not only faced evil, but drove straight into its decaying heart and fucked it up with a crowbar. I really like that. I feel like that summed up a lot of the movies that I watched this year. There was really a lot of, maybe not angry is the word, but movies that pushed and really had a lot of movies that really had a lot of
spirit.
A lot of spirit, but a lot of it did manifest in a lot of ways in a violent energy. And I think there's something to be said about that for this year that's coming to an end. I think it was a year that a lot of people, you know, 2017 was an interesting year. It was kind of just it was the first year of really a new world.
Yeah.
And so a lot of movies I watched in 2017 were spectacular and I love them. And I think 2017 was a great year for film, but 2018 just had a different vibe to it. And it was much more like, let's get dirty. Like there were a lot of movies that really got down into the muck and really did what you said, which was face evil in a lot of interesting different ways, sometimes comedic, sometimes through horror, sometimes through just straight up just violence. So I'm going to start with ones that there are two of these that I haven't seen, but three of them that I have. So there's five movies here. I want to start with one that I saw early in the year, and I'm not sure if I really understand it yet. It does have some serious fans. Thoroughbreds.
Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting pick because That's a movie that I think falls into a certain category for me of marketed a certain way, but marketed in a way that is not necessarily truthful to what the film is actually like.
Sure.
It was marketed a lot as like, oh, you like Heathers?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, no, it's going to be girls doing bad stuff. And I was like, okay.
It's a lot more brutal than
that. It's so much more brutal, especially emotionally. It is emotionally brutal. Why don't you tell me about why you put this on your list?
So I think that, you know, there are a lot of other things on this list where you're fighting, you know, demons, sometimes very literal. But I think the demons that are in Thoroughbreds is it examines the evil that can take play, that can take hold in the hearts of people who are connected with one another. You know, like it's a, at the heart of this movie is a very toxic relationship between these two women. And I think that the way that they, that you see this relationship develop and become more as they become closer with one another, despite their differences, they have this, it's this really interesting combination of kind of codependence where they feel like they're kind of inextricably linked forever. And yet they are just fucking terrible to each other the entire time. And that's, it just keeps spiraling and spiraling in this really interesting, dramatic way that I personally, I was fascinated by it the entire time.
Now, for those who have not actually seen Thoroughbreds, it kind of centers around, the basic plot is there are two girls that go to school with one another. One of them is what we would consider a sociopath or a psychopath. She doesn't feel any sort of emotion. And the other seems to feel a little bit too much emotion, but bottles it up and tries to hide it. And like to give the elevator pitch, these two girls come together to kill the stepfather of the one who feels too much emotion. And because he's like a bastard, he's really mean to her, wants to send her to like military school and shit like that. And the basic premise comes off as a little bit like, oh yeah, this could be a Heathers, this could be that sort of thing. But it goes in a, it's a very dark, it's not even really darkly comic necessarily. While there is a certain gallows humor to what's going on,
sure.
Heathers has a little bit more broadly a dark comedy. Where
there's
There's heart. Yeah, there's a smirk. There's not a lot of smirking here. This is a very harsh movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you do not expect what happens. That's
and,
for sure.
And I think a lot of people did kind of sleep on it. Yeah. And those who even didn't, like me, I really didn't know what to make of it. And I guess, you know, this means that it warrants a second watch where I'm not thinking so much about what I was sold on in terms of the marketing, but rather what I got, and then maybe taking the work as its own entity.
Really quick, do you think that the marketing kind of set up an expectation which led to you maybe not being able to really make up your mind while you watched it? Do you think that plays into it?
100%. I think that was 100% what happened. Okay. It was what happened to a lot of people with It Comes at Night. I think it's
for sure.
It's a little bit of I don't know if Thoroughbreds, I don't believe it's an A24, but it's what I like to think of as like A24 syndrome, which is A24 has this thing where they're trying to sell movies that the general public would probably never watch,
right?
But they're trying to sell it to them in a specific way, and sometimes you have to be a little bit disingenuous about what you're doing in terms of tone and in terms of what people might see. So while that didn't happen to me with It Comes at Night, that one stuck to me right away. But Thoroughbreds, I think I was expecting a certain thing. Or even something like Assassination Nation, I was expecting a certain thing. And while it mostly delivered on what it was trying to sell me, it also was kind of not that in a way, and maybe fell short a little bit of expectations. I know we've got some people out there we know that are big fans of Assassination Nation. And I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but I would probably take Thoroughbreds over Assassination Nation in terms of something that I would want to watch again. Assassination Nation, I was like, I saw it. I thought it was interesting. I think it's a fascinating movie, but it's really not something I need to revisit.
Sure.
Two that I will definitely be revisiting very soon, I would say, are Mandy and Sorry to Bother You, which are two movies that I think are linked in my mind because of their just bold filmmaking styles, both very different movie making styles, and both about two completely different things. But the two hooks for me for Sorry to Bother You and Mandy are the visual style, like the flair that the directors brought to those movies. So Sorry to Bother You, the film debut of Boots Riley, a fantastic film, which really deserves its own conversation, but you know, we might not have time to get into it. And we've talked about Sorry to Bother You before. So that's a fantastically visual movie. It's a shockingly amazing debut. You really don't get a lot of those. You know, sometimes it might take them a little bit before they really lay into what they're trying to do. I would put this up there with like Eighth Grade and Get Out as like just debuts that hit the mark right away.
Yes.
And then Mandy, the second film from Panos Cosmatos, first one, I believe,
Beyond the Black Rainbow.
This one turning into a bit of a cult classic already, in a
like
sense.
Instantly.
Instant kind of cult hit. Mainly, I would say largely because of the involvement of star Nick Cage, but also because of the way that it tackles its material. It's a fucking shocking movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so why did you want to include these on your list?
Because, well, Mandy, sorry to bother you, got a wide release. Mandy is currently fighting to get a wide release, which I think is absolutely warranted, because it's not really like anything else that I've ever seen from a revenge story. Because typically I feel like the revenge story has to be very sober. You know, your mind is cleared for the vengeance that you're trying to seek out.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage is anything but. I mean, he has a very clear motive in mind, but it's totally eclipsed at times by the visual style of the movie, by the narcotics that are taking place, and all of the different interactions you have with the cults.
This is a drugged out movie.
It is.
Truly. We're not trying to say this is like, oh yeah, you got to watch it high, blah, blah. That's stupid.
Don't watch it high.
Don't watch it high. It'll fuck you up.
Yeah. This is a movie that takes the drugs for you.
Yeah. It really, it's one of those things where it's definitely giving you, it's making you feel like you're on drugs.
But I think that it's a wonderful movie because specifically the reason that I love the way that it handles the evil is because Mandy, the titular character, she gets kidnapped. Just a spoiler. She gets kidnapped by a drugged out Catholic cult, like a Christian cult.
Yeah, it's a little. I mean, it's like your Charlie Manson. It's basically kind of an analogy for Charlie Manson.
But Mandy and Nicolas Cage are so in love with each other, which you see in the beginning of the movie. They're so in love with each other. They're so centered in the relationship, and Mandy is established very early on as a character that doesn't take shit from men. You know, she doesn't respect the need to like push masculinity. She doesn't respect that sort of toxic masculinity that you see in so many people, and she outright laughs at it.
Yeah.
And then she is seen by the caravan of people when they're driving down a road. She is walking and they see her, and the guy,
the leader of the cult, oh, I need her. Yeah.
And
it's a lot to do about female ownership and, you know, fighting against that, and how, and as you said, like kind of a cult of masculinity, because it's always, the cult is kind of centered around this male sexual figure,
yes,
that tries to use his manhood in the biblical sense, to control everybody, and Mandy kind of balks in defiance of that. And it's interesting to see Nick Cage in, well, he is a masculine guy, like they have shared interest. I love that you're pointing out how in love they are. They really play up this relationship really well, and they show it really well. It feels like two people actually in love. They both love kind of like weird 70s heavy metal inspired art.
They don't need anybody besides themselves is the vibe that you get.
It's very nice, and there's a genuine care for one another that kind of comes through the movie that is almost at times abhorrently violent.
Yes.
It is, the last third of this movie is just insanely violent, but in a really satisfying way. It's very expressionist, especially Nick Cage's performance is extremely expressionist, and it just works.
Perhaps his most like refreshingly expressionist acting, maybe ever.
Yeah.
Or at very least since Leaving Las Vegas, in my opinion.
Yeah. What, No Vampire's Kiss?
I mean, that was good, but
I'm a vampire. I'm a vampire.
I'm a vampire. I think that this is actually a good movie, though, is the thing.
Fair enough. I'll give it to you. A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Come on.
Come on.
So I do want to say two things about Sorry to Bother You and Mandy. One, Mandy, Tom just gave me a beautiful Blu-ray copy of it for Christmas.
Oh,
so
shucks.
So we'll be watching. Thank you so much for that, Tom.
Uh-huh.
And then Sorry to Bother You, I will say it's a sci-fi comedy. If you know me, I was watching this movie and I was like, I feel like this movie was made for me. It wasn't made for me, but it is. It
I'd say stylistically, it's definitely a in your wheelhouse in yes. terms of like what it hits a lot of beats, and it gets you to think about things in a different way. I mean, we're talking about a year where we had films like Black Klansman, If Beale Street Could Talk, Sorry to Bother You, which are all three very different takes on the black experience in America in different kind of contexts and periods, which are all commenting on today. Sorry to Bother You is the most outright ballsy, I would say. It's a ballsy take from a guy who is known for being like straight up, I don't give a fuck, I'm gonna say exactly what I want to say. And really that's why I'm really glad that Boots Riley is in cinema, because cinema is a really great place to do that.
Yeah,
music, I mean, he's a musician, he's a very talented musician.
Yeah, he does all the music for the movie in The Coup.
Yeah. And it's a different art form. It's different mediums, different expectations, different kind of tropes and all that kind of stuff. But he just strikes me as just the most fucking crazy guy yeah. in the best possible way.
There's like, no reservations. There's no reservations in that movie, which I respect maybe the most out of it. There's no like, you know, he actually, you know, he gave Spike Lee shit for his for Black Klansman because of the cooperation with the police.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that we've got, I mean, it's the three movies I mentioned are three different perspectives on the black experience, and thank God they exist, because realistically, you know, that's one of the things, is that we can't keep boiling down the black experience to a specific thing. And the best part about Boots's criticism is that it wasn't accusatory.
No,
it was just, hey, I'm just letting you know, this is how I feel. And this is where I have a problem with what's going on. I don't hate the movie. I think it's a good movie, but like, this is just where I'm at with it. And it's better to have that dialogue than to not have it. I really want to watch these guys and see where they go. Because Spike Lee, you know, it's worth mentioning that Spike Lee's been in the game for a very long time.
Yeah.
For a very long time. He's a very established director. He's an established name. Boots is just starting out. So, you know, what can this meeting of the minds mean? What can their perspectives tell us about kind of two different quote unquote generations of the black experience here? So,
it'll be interesting to see where he goes from here.
Yeah. Very excited. Now, two movies that I did not get the chance to see. One of them I'm definitely really want to watch very, 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 very soon, is You Were Never Really Here, from a fantastic filmmaker, Lynn Ramsey, Scottish. She's really had a very interesting, special career. You may know her from We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yep,
that was her. And now she's got this new one, starring Joaquin Phoenix. Pretty short too, only about an hour and a half.
Yeah, I think it might even be like a couple minutes under that. It's You Were Never Really Here is it's like Taken if Liam Neeson had genuine PTSD, I think is a interesting way to put yeah. it, because they're constantly struggling with feelings of self-worth, struggling with feelings of Joaquin Phoenix is constantly struggling with his mental health problems. Uh-huh. And he is known, his reputation is he's a hitman, and he's known for killing people in outright brutal ways. And he is hired to kill some people and finds out that they were sex traffickers, and there is a girl that was kidnapped, a small child that he meets in the film, and it's sort of about his murderous rampage to protect her innocence, because you find out very, you know, over and over again that his innocence was taken from him at a very young age in a lot of different ways, and it's something that he is very... he's really struggling with, to see if he can reclaim it or if it's lost forever. So as much as it is a tale about a man trying to protect somebody else's innocence, it's about somebody exploring if that very thing has been lost to themselves.
Wow. That's very exciting. I'm very excited to watch it. It's interesting. It has a really... I love to go and read like Amazon reviews.
Yeah,
like the DVD, and so many people are like, this movie's bullshit.
Yeah, I understand that too, frankly. Like, and that's what I mean. Like, this is not a top five list of like these. Most of these movies would probably not be on my top five, aside from Sorry to Bother You. But
they're definitely worth watching.
They're definitely worth watching. You should watch it at least once.
Yeah, and then let's move on to Border. Now, I feel like I just saw a trailer for this.
Yeah,
And this is the one where it's the folks that kind of have the physical differences. I don't know what the context is, so I apologize if this is rude, but like they look like cavemen.
Yeah, they look very they're told throughout the movie that the main character is told throughout the movie that she had a larger percentage of Neanderthal DNA.
That's okay. Yeah, that makes
in
sense.
In them, which is you find out is not true. And it's I really want to talk about what this movie is really about, but
even
can't
in the trailer, there's like you can tell there's something going on.
Yes.
There's kind of a big twist,
and it's a movie about more than anything else. It's a movie about identity,
mm-hmm.
and it's a movie about people who try to suppress other people's differences because they don't understand them, and that. I think that in this, you know, world where you see people on the right protesting that there are no trans people in Congress, you know, Muslim people in Congress, this fear that can turn into hatred of the things that they don't understand. That's what this movie is about. It's about accepting people for who they are and not ostracizing them because they're different.
Yeah, just because you don't understand it doesn't mean it's not valid.
And the other thing that I want to say is the filmmaker, you probably know them, their fantastic take on the vampire genre with Let the Right One In.
Yeah.
So this movie is a beautifully shot. If you've seen that movie, you know the cinematography is going to be top tier.
Yeah.
And it's shot in this beautiful forest in Sweden, and I mean it's all in Swedish, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a beautiful language for the subject material that they end up the subject that they end up broaching, and I highly recommend that movie.
It's great. All right, so there they are. Border, You Were Never Really Here, Mandy, Thoroughbreds, and Sorry to Bother You, five movies that Connor thinks that you should give them a shot. And I will say that I know for a fact three of these you can watch via streaming services. You Were Never Really Here, that's an Amazon.
Yep.
That's a Prime original, quote-unquote. So that was financed by Amazon. They've got it. Mandy is on Shudder.
Yep.
Exclusively on Shudder. That's how I watched it. And then Sorry to Bother You is on Hulu right now. And I believe that might be under agreement with Neon, but I'm not entirely sure. But it is on Hulu right now. So at least three of the five you can watch right now and really get into. Let's move into some film resolutions for 2019. When it gets to the beginning of the year, you know, you kind of look back at what you've done. You know, this is, I guess you could call it a hobby. Being a cinephile is a hobby of sorts. But you still look at it as a way of like, how can I improve at my hobby? How can I be a better film watcher?
Right.
What can I do more of? I've got two just off the top of my head, but I'll let you go first, Connor.
Okay.
If there's a couple film resolutions that you want to bring into 2019.
So what I want to really do is I feel as though I need to be supporting... I need to get away from supporting like the tentpole films that people are... I mean, I want to see them because they're exciting and everything, but there's so many that you can always see, and I just get the feeling that there is a sedative quality to those kinds of movies because it's something that you can shut your brain off to. You know what's going to happen, and as a person who is constantly involved in art in a... kind of in a personal way, playing music and everything, I'm always looking for things that challenge my perspective. And yet I find when I sit down to watch a movie, I'm more likely to watch a Ant-Man over a Roma. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I really want to try this year. I want to, number one, get involved in more independent movies and movies that are not things that I've necessarily seen before. I want to kind of try to shed that
complacency.
I want to shed that stigma that like feeling uncomfortable or feeling watching things that make you feel a certain way that could somewhat be construed as negative. I want to avoid that and embrace all of the spectrum of emotions that cinema can make you feel, as opposed to like in addition to just, I don't know, like what, impotent excitement.
I mean, that's one way to put it. No, I have one that kind of lines up with that. I think that's a great resolution for me. So as many people who are close to me know, I have amassed a certain, as many cinephiles do, I've amassed a certain large collection of films that I can watch at home. It's kind of like, it's a subset of the hobby, a little bit of the collector's mentality. I've always been a bit of a pack rat when it comes to that. I love having all these things available to me at home, sort of creature comfort thing. I tried to get myself a great TV for watching movies, a little sound bar, everything like that. I feel like I make my movie watching experience pretty cozy. You came over to watch Roma.
Yeah, we just watched Roma. I was going to say, you've really, it sucks. It's shitty. Fuck you. It sucks.
Coming
it's
over
shitty.
Here watching.
Fuck you. No, you've really stepped up your game recently. And that's something that I've always respected about you, is you contribute to, you support cinema. You put your money where your mouth is.
I try to. Well, but in the realm of home media, absolutely.
Yes.
I do like the idea of having people come on by. It's a nice experience to have people come by. You open a nice Crystal Lake Brewing beer.
Maybe a rye barrel aged imperial stout.
Yeah. And you hang out and you watch a movie together in the comfort of one's own home. But the thing is that that is not how film is supposed to necessarily be experienced. Now, there is something to be said about, I have a lot of films from the Criterion Collection, and that's like my way of getting to see movies that I'm not able to see in theaters. And a lot of times, if you want to revisit something or if you miss something in theaters, that's how, you have to watch it on home media. If you can't catch it in the theater, your chances of going back, getting to see it again are pretty much none.
Right.
But I think my big film resolution of 2019 is to go to the movies. As someone who watches a lot of movies and really enjoys cinema, and that's not to say that it's not like I lied about the movies that I saw this past year. It just struck me that I really didn't get a chance to see a lot of them in the theater. I usually saw them a little bit later on home media when somewhere where I might be more distracted. And I will say one 2018 experience that I had that really was the impetus for this was going to see The Favorite in theaters. I can't tell you how much fun I had just giving my attention to this movie for 2 hours and just enjoy, or 2.5 hours. I can't remember how long that movie is because I was so invested.
It was over in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, I can't believe that I'm not doing this more, that I'm not making more of an effort to get off my ass instead of just revisiting things at home. Get off my ass and go to a movie theater and sit down and watch it. Now, obviously, finances are a factor,
right?
And I'm not gonna go crazy. I'm not just gonna drop I'm just gonna drop like hundreds of dollars
a week
just to go see as many movies as I can in the theater. But making more of a concerted effort to try and do that, I think, is really something important, because that's the experience. That's what we all love, that shared experience of sitting in a theater and watching something on the big screen as it's supposed to be seen. Speaking of watching Roma, we had to take, we took the easy route in a sense. We went to my house and we watched it on Netflix as it's available on Netflix. And in a certain sense, I kind of regret not being, trying to make more of an effort to go to a screening of it, since we are in Chicago where they are doing screenings. We're not in Podunk, Idaho. Apologies to Idaho. But they're not showing that in Idaho. You can't go see Roma in the theater in Idaho. So the Netflix thing is a revolution for them. For us, we have those options. And making a more concerted effort to support that, I think, is good. Anything else?
I was just going to ask Tom, you want to go to the movie sometime?
Yeah. Let's go to the movie sometime.
That would be nice, I think.
It would be nice.
I think that we would have some fun.
I think we would absolutely have some fun.
So let's.
But, we could also come over and we could watch Predator again.
That's true. I mean, we have only done that 3 times. Fucking Jesus.
Seriously, I think my most watched movie of 2018 was Predator.
Yeah, I feel like every other time I would text you just to see what was up, you'd be like, oh, I'm watching Predator.
I'm watching fucking Predator.
Because you're just bringing other people over
to watch Predator.
You're just varying people in and out. It's like a rotating door where you've just got Predator on repeat.
Listen. Connor, I ain't got time to bleed.
I got time to die.
I love that the missing part of that line, this is a total sidebar, but like everybody quotes that, ain't got time to bleed. Like, do you know what the response is from the other commando?
So no.
Jesse Ventura says, he's just like, I ain't got time to bleed. And the other guy's just like, okay. Like, that's literally it. Is he's just like, all right.
That's awesome.
This is fucking ridiculous.
I love that movie for, I'm not for its batshit insanity and the comedy that I feel like was pretty unintentional.
I think in some level it was a little bit intentional. John McTiernan knew what he was doing. What, when they included lines when he throws the knife through the guy, he's like, stick around.
Well, that's obviously, yeah.
There's some intent. I mean, they brought on Shane Black originally to beef up the comedy of the script. Predator thing aside, I want to cap it off with something, an interesting little story.
Yeah, and I think that this lines up nicely with a resolution that I feel like we probably both have.
Yeah. PTA, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Paul Phantom Thread Anderson.
Paul Boogie Nights Anderson.
Paul P.T. Anderson.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Paul Phantom Thread Thomas Anderson.
I like that.
Because it's P.T., you know?
Shut up.
Hey. I love dogs. Shit.
Oh, God. Because it's P.T., Phantom Thread. Fuck. All right. So there's been a story floating around since yesterday. On January 4th, we're recording this on the 5th. John Krasinski was at a party. He was just hanging out, rubbing elbows.
Self-aggrandizing shill that he is, watching his own film.
as I can imagine, like, you know,
who filmmakers
plays,
do.
who plays Dwight in The Office? Rainn Wilson.
Rainn Wilson.
There's Rainn Wilson looking at me. He's like, I never forgave you, you bitch. No. I'm sure they're best buds, but
I'm sure they're best friends.
But they're just at a party. John, as Krasinski told the New York Times, John Krasinski's at a party, and they were talking about him. He was talking about a movie with Paul Thomas Anderson, something he had recently watched, and he said to Anderson, he's like, "It's not a good movie." Whatever movie they were talking about, it's not said what movie it was. He's just like, "Yeah, it's not a good movie." And then for Paul Thomas Anderson, he pulls him aside. He's like, and I'll read the quote here. So this is from John Krasinski. He so sweetly took me aside and said very quietly, "Don't say that. Don't say that. It's not a good movie. If it wasn't for you, that's fine. But in our business, we've all got to support each other." The movie was very artsy, and he said, "You've got to support the big swing. If you put it out there that the movie's not good, they won't make us make more. They won't let us make more movies like that." And I think that's an interesting sentiment. And also, I like to imagine that Krasinski is sweetening the story a little bit. Can you imagine if Paul Thomas Anderson grabs John Krasinski?
Yeah.
Listen here, you little shit.
Like, lifts him up with one arm.
That. Yeah. I'm Paul Thomas Anderson. God damn it.
I mean, my opinion matters more than you.
I mean, Magnolia.
But man, if only Paul Thomas Anderson would lift me up with one arm against the wall.
Oh, dude, and tell me to stop being an asshole.
Yeah. But I love that sentiment. I really do.
I think it's an interesting sentiment. Because, well, it's, I think it's more of a recommendation for filmmakers.
Sure.
As the viewing public, and as if you're going to critique, I don't think Paul Thomas Anderson is saying that these things are impervious to critique, because this is just how things have to be. You can't just let a movie, if you think a movie is bad, like, you can say so.
Sure.
And, like, you don't have to let things slide because, like, well, someone worked really hard on it. I don't think that's really what he's saying. But I think filmmakers, yeah, have a responsibility to just kind of, like, not necessarily be uppity about movies, because just because you don't enjoy something doesn't make it a bad movie. But at the same, on the same token, like, you know, you can have that opinion. I don't know. I don't want this to be like, yeah, like, everything just needs to, everything's good. It just might not be for you. I think there's bad movies out there.
There are, absolutely, like, problematic films. You know, you can't go ahead and say that Birth of a Nation is, like, a good movie. You know what I mean? Like, there is genuinely...
But you know, on a certain level, it's like, why are we still talking about the movie? Because it's like the birth. It's one of the most influential movies in terms of it helped birth, like, the concept of the modern narrative film. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's true.
So I don't know. It's always tough because it's like, you don't want to call movies bad because, yes, someone might. That was someone's heart. Someone. Well, maybe not. Some people just fucking phone it in. But someone probably put a lot of effort into that. But then he gets, you know, a lot of people work on it. It takes thousands of hours of work and hundreds of thousands of hours of work and so much person power to like really work on something like that. But then, you know, you go and you watch The Mule, yeah, which is like basically the film version of, I don't know, Clint Eastwood talking to that stool.
Talking to a wall.
And pretending it was Barack Obama. Did you remember that?
No. He did that?
Oh, yeah. At the RNC back in like the mid-2000s, God. Clint Eastwood went on a stage and talked to like a chair and pretended that Barack Obama was sitting. He's like, Mr. President, did you even watch The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Man, he really, man, that guy really has some balls, doesn't he?
Clint, well, he is Clint fucking Eastwood.
Yeah.
He did a movie. He did a movie with he did two movies with orangutans.
That's true.
That is very
true. And they are godless killing machines, let's be honest.
Everybody knows orangutans are pro-gun.
What was I going to say? I think that it's a matter of precision. If you say a movie is bad, I think that there is a way to put it, which you can get the same point across without sounding, without being putting yourself in a position where Paul Thomas Anderson comes up to you and says, hey, like, don't be a fucking idiot.
Yeah, don't be a dick.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not like John Krasinski was saying like anything out of the ordinary. He's like, oh, it's not a good movie.
No, I understand
and
that.
And he's just, I don't know. I guess it's just take it as a sense of perspective, I suppose. Yeah, precision is a good way to put it. And like perspective, be like, when you watch a movie, determining its worth is not, you know, if something it kind of is beyond you, like it doesn't make sense to you. It doesn't make it a bad movie. It might mean that it's not for you, but that doesn't mean that there aren't bad movies out there.
It reminds me of something that Spence Warren, who's been on the show a few times, said to me on Facebook, because I think that I had said that a movie was garbage or bad or shitty or something, and he came out and said, you know what, I think it's our, as somebody who is involved in like talking about cinema, you have to be a little bit more thoughtful with your with your opinion. And I think that that is really, I think that that is really the way to go about things, because if you react to something and if you watch a movie like The Mule and you're like, wow, that was absolute shit, you just hold your tongue for a second, think about the things that rubbed you the wrong way, ask yourself why it rubbed you the wrong way, and formulate an opinion as opposed to just reacting entirely emotionally, because I think that there is a closed-offedness that can come from that, and it's not productive to a conversation.
I agree.
And it's not, you're misrepresenting yourself, I think, no matter what. Even if you say it's a bad thing, a bad movie, it's black and white, and you're ignoring all of the gray, which is really where everything ultimately falls.
Yeah. You know what? I think that's a good place to put it. I think that's a good place to close the book on it. So try to be more nuanced with your opinions. Try to think more about what you're watching and why it rubs you the wrong way. If you still don't like it at the end of the day, then you still don't like it.
That's fine.
But is there a concept of objectively bad? I don't know. Thank you so much, everybody, for supporting us over the last
2 years.
Almost 2 years of doing this show. We really appreciate it. I know things have been a little bit all over the place at the end of 2018, but we had so many fun conversations in 2018 and so many great conversations, so many awesome opportunities as well. And there's going to be so much more coming up. Keep your finger on the pulse. There's going to be some stuff involving Rendezvous in Chicago.
Yep.
Over at the Gene Siskel. So we'll give you more details about that. And just so much great stuff coming up. Next week, we're going to be talking to an actress, Hannah Copen.
Yep.
About her new project, and as well as the director of that project. So that's what's coming up next week. But until then, keep watching great movies. Go out and support independent cinema. And hopefully we'll see you at the Best of the Midwest Awards happening on January 17th. That's a Thursday. I know we're looking to get dappered up. We're looking to go have a little bit of fun, you know, maybe talk some cinema with us. You can find us over there. But until then, I have been Tom Hush.
And I have been Connor Cornelius.
And you've been listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN+, your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. We'll see you all next week.